Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ja, då är det en ny uke och det är en ny episod av Hans och Holund. Det är ju närmast en jubileumsepisode. Vi har kommit oss till episod nummer 10 här i podcasten. Och vad är väl bättre då än att ha med sig en gäst? Gästen, han har varit med faktiskt tidigare i podcasten till mig och Hans Christer. Han heter Dario Colonia och han var med i episode 8. Akkurat nå så sitter jeg faktisk i heimlandet til Dario Colonia i Schweiz, nærmere bestemt St. Moritz, for her i helga skal det gjennomføres La Diagonella, og der skal Dario Colonia blant annet delta. Men Dario Colonia, han er først og fremst en av de all-time greats innenfor langrennssporten. Han har vunnet verdenscupen totalt 4 ganger, og også vunnet 4 olympiske gull for å nevne nøken av hans meritter. Han er faktisk født i samme årskull som er 1986, der en betydelig mer kjent nordmann, Petter Northug, også er født. Og Petter Northug og Dario Colonia, de kjempet side om side og var rivaler i mange, mange år. I denne podcasten blir vi kjent med hvordan Dario Colonia trente når han var liten, når han var juniorutøver, og ikke minst hvordan han trente for å vinne alle disse verdenscuprennene og olympiske gullmedaljene. Vi håper at denne episoden kan være spennende for alle som følger med på det våre podcastepisoder. Den på engelsk, så jeg håper folk kan litt engelsk. Og for deg som da normalt irriterer seg, eller synes det dumt at denne podcasten går på norsk, her kommer det da en engelsk spesialepisode med Dario Colonia. Yes, welcome back to Hans and Holund, and we are so excited because today we have a special guest on the podcast. He's not just somebody, he's actually someone that's won a shit ton of cross-country skiing races. He has, among other, 4 Olympic gold medals, he's got several medals from the World Championships, he's got 76 podiums in the World Cup, and he's got over 25 World Cup victories, and he's won the Tour de Ski 4 times. Dario Colonia, welcome to our show. How are you doing?
Thank you for having me. I'm fine, thanks.
That's wonderful. And of course, I have with me my name brother, Hans Christer. How are you doing?
I'm fine, yeah. So just coming home from the studio. We've been covering the Tour of Ski, and it's been an exciting day in Davos. So, yeah.
And speaking of Davos, that is where you live right now, isn't it, Dario?
Yes, correct. I'm living for 17 years now in Davos. After my school, I moved here, and that was my hometown, home base to train and live in Davos.
And it's a bit interesting because I tried to Google a bit Dario Colonia's training, And I couldn't find so much, Dario. As I said in the intro, like, you've been this extremely successful cross-country skier. Do you think that people know how you trained?
Maybe, I don't know. I think the most, like in Switzerland, maybe it's not like a big topic, like maybe in Norway, that you, of course, the media was writing a lot also about training and everything, but it's not that you go maybe so deep in the details and write a lot about this. And we don't, like, for sure, we don't have like podcasts and other things, or like media in Norway. You can read every day something about cross country. So yeah, for sure, maybe it's not so much known about my training, but otherwise it's also not a big secret. It's just maybe it was not written too much about it.
I see. But Hans Christer, then it's so good that we have Dario here, so people that are nerds like ourselves and love training can get to know a bit more about Dario.
Yeah, of course. He's one of the legends in the sport, and he's right up there with Bjørn Dæhlie and Petter Northug, and so I'm quite exciting, and I also know that there's many ways to train, and there's no one way. There's always many ways. So I'm quite exciting for this podcast episode.
Then we're two, Hans Christer. I am like a little kid waiting for Christmas Eve, because there is probably going to be a lot of interesting things you're going to share with us, Dario. But I want to start with the start. And I know you come from a small place in Switzerland called Valmürstädt. And how was your childhood? Like, were you already, when you were like 3, 4, 5 years, like, I'm going to be a cross-country skier? Or were you, what did you, how was your upbringing?
Yeah, no at all. I grew up in Valmürstädt. It's a really small valley in cross country, you know, it's a little bit from Tour de Ski maybe. It was really nice to grow up there. So the, how you say, the world, it's still good there. And it was good time in school, and also I've been a lot outside as a child already. I love to be outside. For sure, you grow up maybe a little bit different, like maybe in Norway, where you stay with 2 or 3 years on the skis and you go out with your family. And for me, it was more the first sport was like alpine skiing, I think, maybe like almost everywhere in Switzerland. It's like sport number one, especially in winter. And but I was always active. Then I play football with maybe 5, 6 years I started, and did some running and cycling. So I was always active, but started quite late with cross-country skiing with 11, 12 years. And this was more like a coincidence, because we had a race in Valmürstädt, yeah. And then I decided to start there, and I was quite successful. And so then my journey as a cross-country skier started there, yeah.
I see. And you said you were 11, 12 years, and then, just of curiosity, did you win the race, or were you far behind?
No, I didn't win, but I was like fifth, and I remember, because I wrote also a book last year, and so I wrote a little bit also about the beginning of my cross-country career, and but it was quite really good result, because it was the biggest like race for young skiers in Graubünden, the region where I live. And so it was really good race. For, I think there were 53 or some participants, which was for Switzerland, it's normal. Maybe Norway will be 300, but it was a really good result, I think. And then was also motivated and to do more. But I knew already there that I have some talent for endurance sports, but I didn't I could do it on a high level till there. Mm. And I think it was also some talent in other sports. It was also like in, as I said, I did like alpine skiing, and there's also like a small story in a popular race. I beat Carlo Janke, which was later also Olympic champion and world champion. So I think some uh-huh. talent was also there, but somehow it was more going more and more direction cross country later.
Mm. When was the first time you can remember where you were like, I'm going to become a cross country skier, like this is going to be, I love this, and I'm going to do everything I can to become the best I can be in cross country skiing?
Yeah, well, after, yeah, because I started quite late, it went quite quick. And then with 14, I was third on the Swiss Championships, and with 16, I won the Swiss Champs. And then there, I decided to go to a sports school in Engadine. Then really we focused to be a good cross country skier, and I could always do small steps, and then at the end of my junior time, I was third on the World Championships behind Peter Nordtug, maybe you know him, far behind, but I was third. And at this point, I decided after the school, I want to go to be a professional skier and to be good in that. Yeah?
There's no doubt about that. And actually, the year after, you became a world champion in the under 23 championship, if I'm not wrong, Dario, in Italy, where you beat, among other, Ilya Chanusov, Moritz Magnifica, and Marcus Hellner, which are some legends of our sport. And Hans Christer, you actually were junior world champion when you were on Dario's age, but you did not have maybe as easy transition to a senior as Dario.
I was having a little different progression. I think I was quite good when I was a junior, but I didn't handle the switch from being a junior to a senior. So yeah, it was just a little bit too much training, I think, and wasted some years of my career in my early 20s. But learned a lot. So, but it's, you have Johannes, who has been the best since he was quite young. And you have also Simen Krüger, which was quite bad when he was young. So, we all have our stories, and I think it's harder also to be good in cross country skiing when you're from Swiss or Switzerland. In Norway, we have maybe better skis when we are younger. Also, better bigger ski clubs and also better conditions, maybe ski conditions. So it's I think Norwegian have a advantage from a young age, but it's we're quite spoiled in Norway, I think.
I agree with you, we are pretty spoiled. And Dari, you talked about that you started at high school or on this ski school. Can you remember approximately how many hours you trained when you were a junior? Maybe you didn't even count the hours, but if you were going to guess, like when you were last year junior, 18, 19 years old, like how much did you train?
Yeah, I think it was around 600 hours. So it was, I think it's not that much.
No. But was it a lot of intensity then, or just low intensity training, or did you do a lot of intervals and high intensity, mid high intensity, or can you remember?
No, I think it was already quite a lot of intensity. I had also a Norwegian coach already there, and philosophy was to develop also this VO2 max already in this young age. And I didn't have the big hours. And also it was a sports school, but it was only the Wednesday afternoon I had no school, like otherwise twice a day, or like morning and afternoon. And I was training in the evening. Maybe I did I did every evening like a session, and was not, and maybe a little bit more in the weekend. But I was not I was training well, I think, but I was not like a professional skier. And this time it was it was maybe it was also compared maybe with yeah I was obviously a little bit comparing with also with Peter Northug, which was my age, and this time it wasn't completely other point, but this was, for me, it was not even possible to do so much on my situation. And and I did this biggest step I did after the school, the year after school, as you mentioned before, when I was an U23 world champion two times, and also other good results. I did the thing in this year, I did 200 hours more than in one step. Yeah. And it worked. Okay, I came from a very low amount, but it worked very well, and I could handle it very well, and had the results were here. Yeah.
I get so curious when you say that you did a lot of intensity. Like, does that mean 4 times 4 minutes, or does it mean 4 times 10 minutes, or like how long repetitions and how many?
Like more the shorter. Like intervals, I would say, like till 5 minutes was a lot. Yeah.
Okay.
6 times and 4 times 4 minutes and like this maybe. Yeah.
And you did this in altitude, right? Like 1600 meters of where the school was.
Yeah, the school was exactly on 1600. It was quite high. And sometimes we were training also in the valley on 1200, but I grew up on 1200, and the school was on 1600, and also the Vos, it's 1500, so I was a lot in altitude. Yeah.
How, Hans Christian, when you hear this, in Norway we say, when you're in high altitude, don't do high intensity training, just do threshold and low intensity, and Dario is now saying he did 4 times 4 minutes high intensity. Well, what's your first initial thought to what he's saying?
Yeah, but I think it's different when you're grown up in altitude. I think the body is responding differently than us in Norway that are growing up at lower altitude. So, if you're not training that much, I don't think it matters too much. But if you're going on a training camp and training like 25. Maybe even more hours a week. I think it can be a little scary, but I also did a lot of the same training as Dario. I think a lot of short intervals from all the way down to 1 minute to maybe 3-4 minutes. I had almost no threshold training when I was a junior. I don't think I even knew what it was. So a lot of has changed since then. But at that time, it was short and hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it was really the same for me. I think I didn't know at this time what the threshold is, or like, I think we never did like longer intervals. Maybe what we did was like test race, or like a mountain running or something, or which maybe 20, 25 minutes, but never like 10 minutes threshold or something on this time.
I see. And I you don't have to say the exact number, but you said you had a Norwegian coach and the goal was to increase the engine. And by that, I'm guessing the VO2 max. I think you actually said VO2 max. And do you want to say the exact number, or can we know at least if it was above 85, the highest you measured?
Yes. But also the highest measured was, I think, 89.
89?
Yeah, but
wow.
that's a little bit, you know a lot about this data, and so I'm about this number, I've always a little bit careful, but because we did a test in this national center, and they had a lot of different like results always, and then they decide to change the way to measure the VO2 maximum with these bags, like I think it's quite old method, but it's quite
the
safe.
Douglas bag.
Yeah, correctly. And then
that's golden standard.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, but I'm not totally sure, but I think it was this. And then the number was much, much lower. But it was more like correct, and to the goal was just to see how the VO2 was developing, and not to have 1 times 89 and then maybe 84, and so that I'm a little bit careful. And where we did this test was on 1,000 meters always, and that's also like a different than on the sea level. And then with this new method, I was around 77, 78, so it was quite low, I think. Yeah?
But maybe, but then again, you have
they said with the sea level, maybe you are some until 10% higher, then you are again around 85 or something, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I know that's 100% correct, Dario. You would easily be above 80 if you did the same test, even with the other method at a sea level. And just out of curiosity, because I know the Swiss Federation is really good at being, I think, when it comes to collecting data, have you ever measured like HB mass, like the total amount of hemoglobin in your body? Is that something you've done as well?
Yes, we did. Yeah, I think the number was around 1,200.
That's, I can tell you, that is really high. And how much did you weigh at that time? Do you remember? Ish.
The weight was around 77, 76. Yeah. So.
I can say that's 5.6 grams per kilo body weight in HB mass, and that is very high. That is world class.
How much?
You were world class. 15.6 grams per kilo body weight.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. Yeah. I have the data here on the computer.
Okay, nice. No, but that is.
But I know I was really. And then at the end, it's written how much higher you have compared with the average of all athletes. And then, I was for sure on a good level compared to the Swiss athletes. So, yeah, how about you, Hans Christer?
What was your VO2? No, well, the VO2, Hans Christian. Was my coach back in when I started to ski fast as a senior, at least. It was also different from where I was testing.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free
or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So I was testing some in the Olympic Center, and also some testing in a Norwegian sports school. But maybe Hans has the number. It was over 90, I think.
Yeah, this will actually be exclusive because we've actually never said this live to anyone. But we actually had one test. The highest we measured ever with Hans Christer was 99. And I remember
now I know you, why you were so strong.
No, but I recalibrated the machine afterwards, and it showed correct reading. So but at 99, I don't know, Hans Christer, if I still have the recorded data, so it's not fake news. You measured over 90 several times.
Yeah. I think what I remember, maybe around 95, 96, but it also, you can have like some seconds really high, but you can also measure how it was over 1 minute, maybe. It's different ways to measure it, but it was over 90.
We are doing this about 30 seconds for sure, or 1 minute, I don't know exactly, but... For a longer time, yeah.
Yeah, but also it was higher in the NIH, which is the Norwegian Sports School. It was higher there than it was on the Olympic Center. So, it's different machines and different calibrations, and I don't trust that exact number, but. My not biggest strength as a skier was the VO2 max for sure.
There's no doubt about that. But going a bit back to you, Dario, did you in the Switzerland national team ever test like the VO2 max when you were like double pulling, or just running or skating or?
No, we did it on diagonal, like I say, and classic uphill. I think the reason was because they thought they have, you get the highest likely result, or like you need you're like your breathing and lungs the most there. Also in running we did in the first years, but then when we got the big treadmill, I think 2007-08 in the Olympic Center, we did it there on the roller skis always. Yeah, but we changed a little bit. It was first it was not so steep. It was quite flat. Like flat diagonal, and then we did a little bit, and also quite long. It was then the test was about nine minutes, I think. And then they changed, did a little bit steeper, but for a VO2, it was not a big difference. It's okay. How is it? How is it in double pulling?
The reason I was a bit interested in that was because there are some studies showing that today the people that are skiing today, I do not know, and there's not so much data on the skiers around 2000, let's say 14 to 2018, but today the best skiers maybe have not so high VO2 max per kilo body weight. They have maybe slightly lower, but their VO2 max in double pulling is higher because they have more muscle mass in their upper body. So it's closer to the VO2 max running or diagonal skiing. So I was just curious if you ever measured anything of that.
No, we did several tests on the treadmill, also double pulling test. But there was more like a capacity, or like how far you can ski in some minutes. Yeah.
Well, that's super interesting.
We don't only this diagonal. Yeah.
But it's also interesting to see that when I was measuring the highest, it was in 2013, I think. You correct me wrong, Hans, but.
No, it's correct.
But I was maybe on top between 2018 and 2022, And in later years, I was measuring a lot lower. So there's no direct correlation between a high VO2 max and cross country performance or skiing performance. It's it's many factors, and also the for the listener, the VO2 max is for most people it's going down from maybe around 25 years of age, and yeah, it's not it's not the one thing, but it's one of many things that determine how fast you will ski. So
I think same. I think it's always one of the first questions where you got how high was your VO2, but it's not will decide if you are now Olympic champion or not. I think you have to be on a high level, and for sure. And but also like I said, these tests on VO2, I think I was not a highest even in our team, but we did a lot of tests with this hemoglobin and this double polling, as you mentioned. Also this you need more power now in cross country, and then we did also for sure the threshold, and compared all the tests, I was always maybe for sure the best in Switzerland. But when you compare only the VO2, there were two or three other skiers on the quite same level. Yeah.
I see. But do you think that you said you did a lot of high intensity training when you were a junior, and then when you became first year senior, 2007, you increased the training with around 200 hours, give or take. Did you continue to increase the volume of your training then the following years, or did you stay around 800 the rest of your career? Like, did you go up to 1,000 or above 1,000, do you think?
I think around 1,000, yeah, was... In the last years of my career was around 1,000 hours, maybe also a little bit more. But I think when I won the first time the overall World Cup in 2009, I did around 850 hours. So, and I think at this time it was, I don't know, but it was quite normal, maybe not super high. But I think it changed a little bit more than this direction 1,000 also when. Maybe when Sundby came and other skiers, we did more. Maybe also Johannes Christer with more hours. But I was long on this 850, 900 hours. And then also from maybe 2015, 16, it was then more than direction 1,000 hours till the end of my career.
And when you say 1,000 hours, like, did you train then, like, how much did you train during the summer a month? Would that be like 100 hours, or would you ever train above 100 hours a month, or?
I was never super high, yeah. I was also there quite consistent, and maybe a lot of months about, 100 hours. I think it was never much more, never did like 120 or maybe even 110, so it was just around 100, I think, or a little bit more, yeah. And but I like to train, and I think, yeah, also here in Switzerland on the altitude, for sure on our team, I was one with the biggest amount, and was also able to train a lot, and I like to train a lot, and I also had a good feedback from training. Yeah.
I see. And just before we tap into a bit, did you ever do what Hans Christer did at the end of his career, like these long sessions lasting 5-6 hours, or was it usually two sessions a day, where the first one maybe was a bit longer than the second one?
Usually, yeah, the last one, yeah, with the two sessions, and yeah. For sure, the morning session was maybe with the more important, like interval, or also a little bit longer, and afternoon a little bit shorter. I did some like this also from 5 hours, maybe 4 or 5 hours in the last 2-3 years of my career. but this would not been my best. So yeah, but for sure we went also in this direction, also with the coach. We did this with these longer trainings, but yeah, it's a little bit different. Yeah. That maybe you respond quite well, I think, like Hans Christer.
Yeah. So, but I've been training on many different ways during my career. I think we had the same trainer when I was a junior and you was a little older, Fredrik Aukland.
Yeah.
So, in my last year as a junior, I was doing a lot of hard sessions. We had these training bulks where we were training maybe 5 to 6 days in a row with hard sessions, and then maybe a 1 week without any hard sessions. And it was working quite well when I was training a little less hours, less volume, but it didn't work when I was training more hours. And then I think I had maybe from 2013 to 2018, I was training quite traditional, a little bit more hours, maybe around 800-850, and two hard sessions a week. But then I felt like I didn't get any better after, especially after the Olympics in 2018, as I thought that I need to do something else to keep improving. And then in 18-19, I was training even less, but more hard sessions. And and I was measuring my VO2 max late in the training season, and the VO2 max was going down, even though I was training harder than ever before. So then I, then I understood that I wasn't responding to that type of training, and then I just switched it totally around and was training maybe one hard day a week with two hard sessions on one day, but also a lot more hours and more long sessions, and by switching switching the training, I was keeping I kept improving. So
and then total amount was also higher than after year.
So from 20 spring 2019 to this spring, I was around 1,000 hours a year. Maybe a little more in 2020 and 2021, but that was because of COVID, and we were competing a lot less and had more time to train.
But one thing that's I just need to know, Dario, because I mean, you said you've been living now in Davos, I think you said 17 years. And when you do your training, that means you're doing, I guess, all your trainings in Davos, or not all of it, but a lot of the training is done in Davos, correct?
Yeah, for sure, yeah. So for some in summer, sometimes we go down for longer roller ski sessions. But most of the training it's in Davos, also in winter, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But do you like in Norway? I get back a bit to this altitude, because in Norway there's so many people that are afraid of this altitude and training hard or training too much. And I know that you live there, so for you, but do you ever think about that when you live in altitude, or do you just train? Like,
no, not really. I was not thinking about it. For me, it's normal to. To like to live and train here, so that's to be honest, for me it doesn't feel much what's a big difference to be in low altitude. I don't think, maybe I can train a little bit more, but I don't have the feeling that I feel much better in low altitude, or my more recovered. So yeah, maybe I'm just used to live on this altitude and train, and so that was quite normal. Huh?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean it's the interesting part is you were good in all altitudes. You were good when you were competing in Rukka, and you were good when you're competing in high altitudes in Valmuster. So is there any like secret, do you think, to why you were good in all altitudes?
Yeah, maybe I was not thinking about too much. And I remember it was always a big like discussion, and not anymore in the last years too much, but before it was always the Norwegian, they're so afraid about altitude when they come to Davos, and they're so bad, and it changed also, or you changed a little bit also the training. It did a lot of altitude, and I think you were quite strong in the last years in altitude also always. Maybe, of course, it's when you come directly from many weeks in on the sea level to Davos, it's not so easy. Also now I think that the Swedish team is living in Långkvart, like on low altitude.
Yeah.
So they have still some respect is here, and but for sure everybody reacts a little bit different. For sure, I think when you go down, for me it was never a problem. Like when I went to the World Cup, like for example to Oslo, like 2 days before the race. And then I felt quite good on the low altitude. Sometimes I was missing a little bit the speed or like in the beginning, but otherwise it worked quite well. And then anyway, in altitude was maybe an advantage for me to live here and train here. I never did like really. I tried a little bit altitude training, but if you live on 1500, it's not so easy, because then if you go to 1,000 meters, for example, to Livigno or Engadine, it's I think it's not enough. It's not this effect like you come from Norway to Livigno. And on the other hand, I think it worked quite well. For example, for Sochi, I prepared mostly in Davos. It was exactly the same altitude, and this worked really well for me. Yeah.
Ja, det var første del av den spesialepisoden vi har med Dario Colonia, der han avslører litt hvordan han har trent når han var yngre, og ikke minst i starten av seniorkarrieren. Han inne på testdata i VO2 Max, han inne på hemoglobinmasse, og ikke minst dette her med at han sammenlignet med kanskje veldig mange nordmenn ikke tenker så veldig mye over at han på rundt 1600 meter, fordi han født og oppvokst i Valmuster, som omtrent samme høgde, og til daglig bor i Davos. Dette her skal jo selvfølgelig både og Hans Christer prate mer om når vi samler. Som dere har forstått, Hans Christer han ikke i St. Moritz med meg, og derav så det jeg som alene i dag på introen og outroen på dagens episode. Men ikke for tvil, Hans Christer han tilbake neste veke, og da skal vi gå inn på episoden med Dario, men også så verdenscupen i gang igjen. Verdenscupen har forflyttet seg den kommende helga til Oberhof. Der skal det gås sprint, det skal gås en 20 kilometer fellesstart i klassisk, og det også stafetta. Værgudene derimot, de virkelig på tyskernes side. De har bøtta ned med snøv der i dag, og det skal det fortsette å gjøre. Og det har blant annet medført at den norske skiløperen som skulle ned til Oberhof, sitt fly ble kansellert. Vi får håpe at Kristine Stavås Skystad, Johannes Høstfold Klæbo og de øvrige i den norske landslagstroppen kommer seg ned, og at de rett og slett presterer på det høyeste nivået. Det blir i hvert fall veldig spennende. Jeg håper også at mange tyskere har tatt turen. Hvis dere har sett litt på TV-sendingene fra Tour de Ski, så det blitt en økning i antall TV-seere på tysk TV. Kanskje ikke rart, de har jo hatt mange kvinnelige utøvere som har hevdet seg. Men Moch, som vi var inne på i episoden rundt Tour de Ski, han klarte faktisk stykket å komme seg helt opp på pallen til slutt i årets Tour de Ski. Så det är mycket att glädjas åt kommande helg. Där är också, som jag nämnde inledningsvis, ett skirenne Ski Classics. Här är La Diagonella som är. Det är Esat Moritz och det är ju en klassiker. Där ska bland annat specialgäst vår, Dario Colonia, delta. Och jag själv, jag ska stå sannsynligtvis och lange dricka till dessa utövarna som är på Team Aker Dali. Vi hoppas att dagens episode har varit spännande för de som har hört på. Och för de som inte kan engelsk så ska jag och Hans Christer ta en uppsummering när en har hört del 2 också. För det kommer en del 2. Den kommer om 2 veckor. Och då går vi också in på alla de små detaljerna och hemligheterna som Dario Colonia hade för bland annat OL i Pyeongchang, där han dag för dag avslöjade hur han tränade för att faktiskt vinna sitt 4:e olympiska guld. Med det så önskar jag alla en strålande dag vidare och tack för idag.